This will not be on the screen. I want you just to envision and think. Picture this story. That's why I didn't have it on the screen purposefully. Mark chapter 4, it says, on that day when evening had come, he, Jesus, said to them, let us go across to the other side. And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. The other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. Then the wind ceased and there was a dead calm. He said to them, why are you afraid? Have you still no faith? And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, who is this? That even the wind and the sea obey him. We've been talking the past 4 weeks about a message. The message of the gospel. The gospel message is a message of hope. It's a message of love. Shane shared last week about how the gospel message is a message of new beginnings. One of the prophecies about Jesus' birth, one of the popular prophecies of Jesus' birth, is found in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6. It says, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of what? Peace. See, gospel message is a message of peace. It's a message of peace. We just celebrated Christmas, Jesus coming to earth. For unto us a child is born. And one of Jesus' prophesied titles is that he would be the Prince of Peace. The Prince. A prince is the son of a king. And in this case, the son of the king. Prince of Peace. Peace. Sometimes that word just sounds like it belongs in fairy tales, doesn't it? It sounds like that word belongs in fantasy and fiction because we don't see much of peace in the real world. Is there a peace that exists in the non-fiction realm? And things around us, they're so filled with turmoil. Chaos and disorder are all around us. That's not peace. Stress and worry. We stress and worry about our health, about our finances, about our job. There's frustration and discord in our relationships, our work relationships, our friends, our neighbors. Even the relationship right there in your home can be filled with frustration and discord. A relationship with your spouse or with one of your children or all of your children or everyone in the house. Sometimes it's that way. No one likes that. That's not peace. But yet that frustration, the discord that's at work, it's with your friends, it's even in your own home. Fighting, disagreements, fear, hate, hatred, wars. That's not peace. But that's what we find in our lives. That's what's all around us. Even inside of us. So can peace be a real thing? Is it really possible to have peace? Is it realistic to believe that we can have peace? It seems far-fetched to say yes, but that is the answer. That is the truth. Peace is a real thing, and peace is available to all of us. This title that's given to Jesus is not some sort of hyperbole or some sort of exaggeration. Jesus is the Prince of Peace, and that's what came to earth that day, years and years and years ago on the very first Christmas. Let's read that together. Let's go on. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. And his name, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. The gospel story is a message of peace. Think about the core thing that Jesus came to bring. What was the core thing that Jesus came to bring? What was that? Salvation. Salvation, at its base level, gives peace. Let's go and write that down. Salvation, at its base level, gives peace. We don't have to worry about what will happen to us when we die. In November, we talked for a couple of Sundays. Justin Sanford was here, and I got a chance to finish it up on the two Sundays that we talked about King David. King David wrote a great deal of the Psalms in the book of Psalms. Not all of them are accredited to him, but a great deal of them are. David didn't have the most peaceful of lives. Just from the 2 weeks we got a chance to revisit David's life in the story in November, we were reminded of that. He did not have the most peaceful of lives. And that was because of both external reasons, things that were out of his control, and also internal reasons, things that he brought upon himself. David's life was full of turmoil, chaos, disorder. It was full of stress and worry. It was full of discord and frustration, fighting, disagreements, fear, hate, hatred, and war. Yet you see the word peace find itself in the 13 of the 150 Psalms. So throughout the message today, we are going to have a number of different quotes from the book of Psalms, because I thought if someone who would understand peace in the midst of turmoil and chaos and fighting and war and fear, if someone would understand peace in that type of situation, it would be David. And so we're going to be looking at various passages from the book of Psalms, like this one, Psalms 85, 7 through 8, where David writes, "Show us your unfailing love, O Lord." And if you're going to take the love challenge, the unfailing love challenge, remember I told you guys about that. It's out there at the information center. If you want to memorize a verse from the Psalms about unfailing love, about God's unfailing love, once every 2 weeks this year, this would be one of them. Show us your unfailing love, O Lord, and grant us your salvation. And then he continues, "I will listen to what God, the Lord, will say." He promises what? Peace to his people, his saints, but let them not turn to folly. So salvation gives peace. Think about the passage we read earlier about Jesus calming the storm. Who initiated the idea to go to the other side of the lake? It was Jesus' idea. Jesus initiated that idea. That was his idea. And the disciples took Jesus with them in their boats. What does your boat look like today? Is Jesus in your boat? Is he in your life? Have you let him aboard your boat? Have you let him into your heart? Have you let him join you? Because if you haven't, then no wonder you don't have peace. He's the Prince of Peace. How is he supposed to be the Prince of Peace and bring peace into your life if you haven't allowed him access to your life? If you haven't allowed him into your boat, you know, skip past all the storms that you're going to experience in your proverbial boat. Skip past all the storms. What happens when that boat sinks? What happens when it's over? What happens when you've reached the end of your life? If Jesus isn't in your boat, then that's not a peaceful thought. He's not in your life, then death is not a peaceful thought. Peace with your eternal existence is a big deal. Jesus brought salvation. He freed us from Satan's grasp. Paul says in Romans chapter 16, verse 20, he says, "The God of peace will soon crush Satan under your feet." Does anyone else find that verse ironic? as you read that. The God of peace will soon crush Satan. It's just, it's so different. The God of peace, and you have this such a violent description that follows the God of peace. He will soon crush Satan. That doesn't sound like a peaceful God, but it is. See, it's peace to those who are being saved from Satan's grasp, from his power. It's not peaceful for Satan. It's not meant to be. Jesus came to earth to offer salvation, to crush the head of the serpent and set us free from Satan's control, and that brings peace. With salvation comes a relationship with God, and that's another way that Jesus is a source of peace for us. He allows us to have a relationship with our Maker, our Creator, with God. So let's write that down. A relationship with God results in peace. Jesus had a relationship with God, didn't he? We know many times he got alone to be with God, to talk with God. He talked about God as his Father. So when the storm came up, what was Jesus doing in the boat? He was sleeping. That was a shock to the disciples. I think many of us, when we first encountered that story, when we first read that story, there's a shock value to that. They're worried about dying. He's asleep. He could do that because he had a relationship with God. He had a relationship with, he knew that God loved him. He knew that God cared for him. He knew that he was safe in God's arms because they had a relationship. He knew that because of the relationship. He loved God and God loved him. Wouldn't you like to sleep peacefully through your life's storms? A relationship with God can make that happen. That sounds like an infomercial. Wouldn't you like to sleep through life's storms? See, we're sold so many things that seem so unbelievable. This is believable. This is truth. God can be that peace for you. Relationship with God can make that happen. Think about what being in a relationship with the Creator of all that surrounds you can do for you in the peace category of your life. God's in charge of it all. David, who had people trying to kill him, he writes, I will lie down and sleep in peace. For you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. See, even amidst people who are trying to kill him, that was his life. People who hated him. Before he ever did anything, on the good side of David's life, when we looked at part one of David's life, Saul had people out to try and kill him. And then after some bad decisions, there was more war and turmoil in his life. See, David's relationship with God allowed him to rest easy at night, to sleep in peace, knowing that God will be his safety. Psalm 29, another psalm that was written by David, he writes, the Lord sits enthroned over the flood. That's a huge picture. He brings up the most catastrophic event that ever happened on earth, the flood. He said, even in the midst of this, what appeared to be chaos and disorder and just awful mess on earth, even in the midst of the flood, God was still enthroned. He still sat on the throne. God was still in charge. The Lord sits enthroned over the flood. The Lord is enthroned as king forever. The Lord gives strength to his people, and the Lord blesses his people with peace. The New American Standard Bible and the New Revised Standard versions of the Bible both put a title on this psalm. And the title they give this psalm is The Voice of the Lord in the Storm. What about the storms you're weathering right now? Is there peace? Because if you have a relationship with God, there can be, and there should be. If Jesus is in your boat, if Jesus is in your boat, that should bring peace, shouldn't it? That should bring a sense of security, a sense of safety. If he's not in your boat, then that's not a peaceful thought. And you have right reason to worry. You don't have the security, you don't have the safety of the Savior in your boat. So how well do you sleep at night? Wouldn't you like to be blessed with peace? Peace comes from a relationship with God. So those are two ways that God gives us peace through Jesus, the peace of salvation, and the peace that accompanies a relationship with him. But we have a part in experiencing peace also. Let's go and write this down. Seek peace through following God's ways. It's not all just given to you. There is some action. There is some activity that you participate in that brings this. See, following God means following God's ways. Before the storm at sea, Jesus' idea was to go to the other side. The disciples invited Jesus into their boats, but the direction and the destination of those boats were Jesus' direction and destination. See, it might be your boat. It might be your life. But if you've invited Jesus in, he needs to be the captain, not you. He needs to be in charge of your direction. He needs to be in charge of your destination. He needs to be in charge of the choices you make. He needs to be your captain. Because, see, walking in God's ways will naturally result in internal peace. It will naturally result in internal peace. You won't avoid the external storms. That's inevitable. But you will be at peace with your decisions and your actions, and that's a big deal. David, of all people, he knew about this. He knew about the peace of walking in God's ways. We know there are many times in David's life where he walked in God's ways, so he would know the peace that accompanies that. And we also know the decisions that David made, some of the bad decisions David made. And David knows the absence of peace in the midst of walking in your own ways and not following God's ways. David writes, "Turn from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it." Don't just want it or expect it or expect the blessings. You need to pursue peace also. It's not all passive. There is some activeness to it. Another book, or another writer of in the book of Psalms, this one is not accredited to David, but it says, "Great peace have they who love your law, and nothing can make them stumble." Isaiah, a prophet who is writing to people who knew this direction, they didn't have peace because of all the decisions that they had been making to reject God. In one of Isaiah's passages in Isaiah 32, it says, "The fruit of righteousness will be peace." So if you're not experiencing peace internally, then maybe it's because you don't have the fruit of righteousness in your life. Maybe it's because you're not walking according to God's ways. Maybe it's because you're walking according to your ways. Paul in the New Testament, Romans 8, chapter 6, he says, "The mind of a sinful man is death, but the mind controlled by the Spirit is life." And he adds a word there, "and peace." So walking in God's ways will result in peace within yourself, knowing that you did the right thing. See, there's no guilt there. When you're walking in God's ways, there's no worries if you made the right decision or not. There's no fear. There's no inner turmoil or battle. But even when you walk in God's ways, there will still be things that happen outside of your control that are not peaceful at all. You've got eternal peace because he's your Savior. You've got internal peace when you walk according to his words, but that doesn't always mean that you're going to have external peace. So walking in God's ways will naturally result in internal peace. However, following God's ways will not always result in external peace. The disciples were in their boats with Jesus present. He was the captain. He was the one in charge of the direction and the destination. And they were following Jesus' direction. They were going where Jesus went when he told them to go. However, they still encountered a storm. Sometimes Jesus will lead you right into a storm. You might be saying, "That doesn't sound like the Prince of Peace to me." Mind you, Jesus will still be your peace in the midst of the storm. But that doesn't mean that he's going to lead you into peaceful situations. He can still be your internal peace. He can still be your eternal peace, even though he's leading you into situations that don't have external peace. Matthew in chapter 10, he quotes Jesus, where Jesus says, "Do not suppose that I've come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword." Notice he says peace to the earth. He's still the Prince of Peace. He's still the Prince of Peace to his people. He still brings peace to his people. This is not contradictory to other places in the Bible. What he's saying is, "I didn't come to bring peace to the earth." And he's going to explain what that means in a second. See, the gospel message is a message of peace for us, but it is offensive to those who don't accept it. And that's going to cause turmoil. That's going to cause fighting. Jesus continues. He says, "For I have come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." See, the message of the gospel of Jesus is polarizing. It is offensive. Not because God is rude. It's offensive because it's truth. And people don't like to hear the truth. Not when it says that they're faulty. Not when it says that they need to change, or not when it says that they need to adjust things in their life to be better, because that insinuates that you're not as good as you could be. That insinuates that you have something wrong with you. It insinuates that I have something wrong with me. And for even those of us who have been reading the Bible for years and years and years and years, the gospel message is still offensive because it convicts. And if it's not offensive any longer to you, then that scares me a bit, because then I'm wondering if it's still convicting you of things that you need to change in your life. The gospel message is offensive because it's truth. And the truth is, we need to change. The truth is, we're not as great as we think we are. The truth is, we need a Savior. See, the gospel message, when we get this confused, the gospel message is about acceptance. It's not about tolerance. Tolerance is a buzzword nowadays. And it's a word that absolutely does not belong in our lifestyle, because it wasn't something that belonged in Jesus' lifestyle. The gospel is not tolerance. The gospel is acceptant. It accepts us, but it doesn't tolerate our behavior. It doesn't make excuses for the things that we do or the way that we live. It says it like it is, and it is offensive when it says that. When the gospel says you're either on one side of the fence or the other, that's offensive. You're either right or wrong. And we live in such a politically correct world where we don't want to tell anybody they're losers. Everybody's a winner. Everybody's a winner. We have sports systems that are up and going now where no one's a loser. We don't want anyone to be a loser. We want everyone to be winners. Well, if everyone's winners, then that means that everyone tied. That means you're all losers because there's no winner. We don't like that. That's why the gospel is offensive. It says there is a winner and there is a loser. It says that there's only one way to receive peace, and that is through Jesus Christ. There's only one way to be saved, and that is through Jesus Christ. And that's not going to bring peace to the world around you. So don't be confused when Jesus is called the peace, the Prince of Peace, and yet he brings the sword. He's still your Prince of Peace because you're in the kingdom. But that doesn't mean that he's the Prince of Peace for those outside the kingdom. In fact, he is the opposite to those. We pursue peace by following God's ways, and that will bring peace inside of us, but it won't always result in peace outside of us. And that makes sense. But what about the times when your world is just crumbling around you? And it's not because of the offensiveness of the gospel. It's not because the gospel's polarized you in some of the relationships of your life. Sometimes it's just because we live in a fallen world. Bad things happen. Hurtful things happen. Sad things happen. Loved ones pass away. Spouses make bad choices. Companies have to make cutbacks. Maybe someone who doesn't live by your standards or morals breaks into your house or your car. Maybe you have an unexpected health problem. What about those times? Does Jesus offer peace in those times? Absolutely. Absolutely. Write this down. The peace Jesus gives isn't always understandable or explainable. The peace Jesus gives isn't always understandable or explainable. As the disciples watch Jesus stand up in the midst of the waves pouring into the boat, in the storm that the clouds cover and it's dark, and they are fishermen who have sailed on this body of water their whole lives, at least four of them. And they're coming to Jesus saying, "Do you not care that we're going to die?" They would know if they were in death's grasp or not. This was not unfamiliar territory for them. They knew how to sail. It was their lifestyle. And yet they're coming to Jesus saying, "We're going to die." And Jesus wakes up out of a dead sleep, which I think is amazing. I don't just pop out of bed. I'm not a morning person. I'm groggy in the morning. And I'm just not with it. And if I drive too soon after I wake up, it's dangerous. Jesus wakes up out of a dead sleep. "Peace, be still." And it dies down. The waves go away, and we're told that it's a dead calm. The disciples stood there in awe, and they asked, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." They had no way of understanding what just happened in their lives. They had no way of explaining that. He just stood up and he said, "Peace be still." That's it. There were no tricks to it. I have no idea. Can you imagine trying to explain that as one of the 12 disciples? It's not explainable. It's not understandable. But it happened, and it was peace. See, sometimes the peace that Jesus gives us, it's not always understandable. It's not always explainable, but it's still peace. See, later in the gospel story, Jesus tells the disciples before his arrest, before his crucifixion, that he does not give peace the way the world gives peace. Jesus gives peace in a different way. Let's write this down. Jesus gives supernatural peace. That's why it's not understandable. That's why it's not explainable. It's not natural. It's supernatural peace because it comes from Jesus. Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7, Paul says, "The peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus." It's not always understandable or explainable. So Jesus is our salvation. He gives us eternal peace. When we follow his ways, we can have internal peace. That doesn't always mean that we're going to have external peace, but we can have supernatural peace in the midst of storms that happen in our life. Things that, a peace that we can't explain. Isaiah 53, as he prophesies about the gospel story of Jesus, he says, "He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows. Yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions, and he was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed.